From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today, On Deadline looks at Donald Trump becoming the first U.S. president, sitting or former, to be convicted of a felony. It's a dark moment for the history books, for sure, but does it matter to voters? Some would tell you we'll only know for sure in November after all the votes are counted, but there are ways to predict its effect. First, let's rewind. Former President Trump was convicted of 34 felony charges over a so-called hush money payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels. It was allegedly made to cover up a sexual liaison between the two. Late-night hosts and social media influencers had a field day with the punchlines. Saturday Night Live alum Anna Gasteyer, you might know her from Mean Girls, said, "In retrospect, I'm glad I decided not to drink every time they said guilty, because I'd never have made it through making dinner." So what's next after this sobering conviction on 34 counts? Trump could technically end up behind bars, but most experts seem to agree that he'll most likely face some other type of punishment, like probation or house arrest. Nonetheless, during an interview with Fox and Friends, the former president said that he would be okay with going to prison. Whether voters are okay with it is another matter. Longtime Republican strategist Mike Murphy joined Odyssey to share more on what this verdict and Trump's other trials might mean for the 2024 election.
Well, I think there was some shock and panic inside the Trump campaign when it was such a clear and unambiguous guilty verdict across the board on these felonies. So the Trump campaign was, well, one, our troops are going to panic, so we got to get a message out to them, do a little storytelling, get a narrative. So these videos are designed more than anything to shore up his troops and turn this into a crusade for a martyr. And the technique is a lot of apocalyptic music and quick cuts and a lot of, frankly, TV pundits taken out of context. You know, to make it look like this is some kind of show trial. And I think it'll be fairly effective with the people who are all ready for Trump. The problem is the election is going to come down to a handful of swing voters in about six different states. And whether or not a soccer mom in Atlanta or Detroit is going to be swayed by Joe Rogan and Steve Bannon saying this is a setup deal, I think is a little dubious.
It's clear he had a news conference today, Mr. Trump, in New York, that he does intend to use his convictions on 34 felony counts as the basis for running for the White House again. I mean, that was, I think, crystal clear from his press conference. He talked about pretty much nothing else. Is that, do you think, going to prove to be an effective strategy? If you were advising him, you're a GOP strategist, would you advise him to do that?
Well, he's got no other choice. He's got to tell his own story here where he's the hero. So he can't say, you know, jeepers, it's true, I did it all, and I'm guilty. He's got to say something. And the only thing to say is, they're wrong, and I'm taking it to the people. This is all illegitimate. This is a put-up deal. It's partisan. Try to make an enemy out of the prosecutor in New York, you know, a political enemy, somebody you can attack for suspicious motives.
Trump maintains that his trial was not only a witch hunt, but also rigged and politically motivated, claiming that the charges came from President Joe Biden himself. "This was a disgrace. This was a rigged trial," said Trump. However, he hasn't offered any proof behind these claims. As for the current president, Biden said, quote, "The American principle that no one is above the law was reaffirmed after the trial's outcome was announced." Biden went on to call Trump's rhetoric reckless, dangerous, and irresponsible. David Katz, a former assistant U.S. attorney in Los Angeles, recently spoke about the trial and how Trump lost.
He's claimed that the verdict was rigged and that it was politically motivated. What do you make of those claims? Is there any sort of credibility to them?
There's no credibility at all. They were not rigged. They were brought properly. The judge, I felt, dealt with them very fairly. He had a couple of tough calls. He made them in Trump's favor. There was some evidence that Trump wanted to keep out that he claimed was more prejudicial than probative. The judge kept it out. As to Stormy Daniels' testimony veering off and becoming rather graphic in places, the judge said that everyone should be alert that that not happened, and the defense attorneys for Trump didn't make an objection. So I just think all of their issues are insubstantial. I think the appeal of the jury instructions is the only one that you could say is substantial, but I think ultimately it's a loser in the state appellate courts. It will not go to the U.S. Supreme Court because the U.S. Supreme Court has no federal question to rule over in this case. And I also think that the gag order and whether the judge should have recused himself, that didn't prejudice Trump. Whatever the ruling was on the gag order, the issue was what came before the jury, not what became before the court of public opinion. And beyond that, the recusal, an appellate court already looked at that and said the judge did not need to recuse himself. And so this judge followed the appellate court that he need not recuse himself.
So let's go back to that federal question that you say SCOTUS has no federal question to respond to. My understanding is that in order for them to have made these felony counts and the misdemeanor counts, had they tried them as misdemeanors, the statute of limitations had expired. So we're looking at felony counts because it was done in furtherance of another crime. That crime, the election interference, which would have been a federal crime, would it not?
It would have been a federal crime, and that's why under President Biden, his Justice Department could have gone after this timely. They decided not to. Prosecutors exercise discretion. They don't indict every case that they could indict. The DA there, I thought it might be a bridge too far, but I thought he tried the case much better than I expected. I thought it was a stroke of genius to start with Pecker, the head of the National Enquirer, and to bring out the catch and kill scheme and to show how much Trump was a part of it, to show that they did it with Trump's participation as to both McDougal and also as to Stormy Daniels. So it was a scheme that he knew about. I thought it was very clear that Cohen would not have put that money out of his own pocket. And even if he did, the cover-up of putting the money out there into Stormy Daniels' hands to hush her up just before the 2016 presidential election was something Trump participated in, and it constituted election interference. I don't believe the appellate court in New York is going to say they had to go into more detail than that. But that's what Trump's going to claim, and we're going to see what the appellate courts rule. I think it will be against Trump.
Okay, let me go back to this federal issue. If the federal election interference issue was indeed a federal crime, is it that they didn't actually prosecute that crime? They just said that the crime they did prosecute was done, that they did this in order to cover up another crime that they didn't prosecute? That's, I think, where the confusion comes in.
Pat, the federal government had no duty to prosecute it. The state government, the DA's office, had every right to prosecute it if it also constituted a state crime. They had at least two theories under which it violated state law. There are state campaign finance laws that you have to make proper disclosure. And when you run for president, you run state by state. So Trump also conspired to do a felony cover-up regarding the state criminal, the state campaign finance laws in New York. On top of that, people who maintain falsified phony books that misstate $420,000 are often, very often, attempting to cheat on their taxes, both federal and state. And so the jury could have concluded that Trump had two state intentions that were unlawful and constituted felonies, to cheat on his state taxes and to violate New York state campaign finance laws when he ran for president. As I say, I think it all holds up. It is a little bit convoluted, but I think it was well explained to the jury. They were a smart jury. They deliberated for over a day. They sent smart questions. And I think they made a very reasoned determination that he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of state felonies.
The Trump family isn't the only one with a member on trial. The president's son, Hunter Biden, was also in a courtroom this week. Last September, Hunter was charged with three crimes. These include unlawfully possessing a gun as a drug user, lying on a federal form when purchasing a gun, and making a false statement about information required to be collected by a lawful gun dealer. 3 months later, he was charged in a separate criminal case related to tax crimes he may have committed. That case will go to trial this September. Jury selection for Hunter Biden's first trial started on Monday, and ABC's Stephen Portnoy joined Odyssey to give us an update.
Well, this case is in Wilmington, Delaware. It involves the purchase of a handgun at a time that Hunter Biden was an admitted drug user. You know, it's against the law. to buy a handgun while you are a drug addict or a drug user. Before you purchase a firearm, you have to fill out the form if you go to a registered, licensed firearms dealer. And prosecutors allege that when he ticked the box no, when asked if he was addicted to or a user of any illicit drug, Hunter Biden was lying. Of course, at the time, he wrote in his book he was a drug addict, addicted to crack. And prosecutors have said in court papers that they intend to present evidence from Hunter Biden's laptop that includes pictures of him with a crack pipe in his hand. He's also, the prosecutors are also expected to call, for example, Beau Biden's widow, who was involved in a romantic relationship with Hunter Biden at the time. She found the gun and disposed of it. All of this documented in text messages, and there was a police interaction at the time, and all of it will likely come out at trial. Why is it the subject of a trial at all? Well, this was supposed to be tied up in a plea deal last summer, but when the judge, Mariela Noriega, who will preside over this proceeding in Delaware, started asking questions about the scope and extent of the plea agreement between Hunter Biden and prosecutors, both sides realized they actually didn't have a deal. Prosecutors said they would move forward with a trial, and that's what's happening not just in Delaware, but also clear across the country in California, where the special counsel has also entered charges that Hunter Biden failed to pay taxes. So today, jury selection in the handgun case.
So, what's next? Trump and President Biden will face off in a presidential debate in Atlanta on June 27th. Then the expected Republican nominee will have to return to New York City for his sentencing just 2 weeks later on July 11th. Depending on how his sentencing goes, Trump may or may not be able to attend the Republican National Convention, which kicks off in Milwaukee on July 15th. Among the other legal issues Trump still has to face this summer are a Georgia election interference case, a Supreme Court decision on his presidential immunity, and two more indictments. If that sounds like too much for one man to overcome in a quest for the White House, keep this in mind. As a candidate for federal office, Trump is restricted only by requirements in the U.S. Constitution. As a little refresher, here are those requirements. The president must be at least 35 years old, they must be a natural-born U.S. citizen, and they must have lived in the U.S. for at least 14 years. There's nothing on criminal convictions. While some states do prohibit felons from running for state and local office, those laws don't apply to federal offices. And as for whether Trump can vote for himself, the answer is also yes. Trump is from New York. There, state law says the only felons who can't cast a ballot are those who are behind bars during the voting process. Florida, where Trump is now a resident, says home state rules apply. As for voters, a YouGov poll conducted after the verdict found that 27% of voters said the conviction made them less likely to vote for Trump. However, 26% also said they were more likely to vote for him, and 39% said the verdict makes no difference in how they'll vote come November. So, the tea leaves that everyone's trying to read to predict the results of the 2024 election? Yeah, they're about as clear as mud. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.